Offered to Curl et al. Versus Dennis Rasmussen, Inc. Justice Wilcox is leaving and not angry and done.
Yeah.
Done, but he is not sitting on this case. He has recused himself. So with those introductions made, I will first lawyer, which is attorney Daniel W. Hildebrand. Mr. Hildebrand will have 25 minutes to argue. You'll see lights will go on. Green means he can speak. Orange, yellow light means he's got 5 more minutes. And the red light means he will stop. And then Mr. Neil H. Banks, Jr. will address the court for 30 minutes, representing Arby's, Inc. And then Mr. Hildebrand will have 5 minutes in the front. Mr. Hildebrand.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's a privilege for me to appear before this court, and particularly in Racine County, and I commend the court for getting out to the various areas of the state, and I think it's a wonderful thing for the public, and I'm privileged to participate in that as a lawyer. This case, unlike many of the cases I think this court hears, involves a question of pure public policy under the common law. And this is the historic function of the courts for centuries, in England coming up and even to this day, where courts develop the common law in connection with what is good public policy and what is good for the people, as is what is decided through the case system. We don't have statutes to guide the court or the parties here, and it's simply a matter of making a decision, as this court does, as to what is good public policy for the state of Wisconsin. And the public policy here is, should a franchisor be vicariously liable for the negligence of a franchisee? The Court of Appeals departed substantially from the Rash case, which, of course, as we all know, is a federal district court decision that emphasizes the right of control over operations, and considerably narrowed that test. And I quote from page 11 of the Court of Appeals opinion. It says, "The most significant factor is to consider the degree of control that the franchisor maintains over the daily operations of the franchisee, or more specifically, the manner of performing the very work in the course of which the accident occurs." And then they go on, the Court of Appeals goes on to say that the decisive factor is whether the franchisor controls the daily operations of the franchisee such that it exercises a considerable degree of control over the instrumentality at issue. What this opinion does is essentially it's almost a carte blanche exception to most of the case law that talks about not only the actual control, but the right of control. Now, every person that goes into a franchise restaurant knows what to expect. When people frequent an Arby's restaurant, whether it be here in Racine, Madison, Milwaukee, Oshkosh, whatever, they see the big sign Arby's, they go in and they know that there's going to be a certain level of cleanliness, what the operation is like, what the product is like. At the restaurant in Madison, there wasn't a big sign out there that says DRI Inc. or Dennis Rasmussen Inc. There's the Arby's sign out there. So people go into the Arby's restaurant, they don't know, and frankly, I don't think they care who the actual owner of that restaurant is.
Mr. Hildebrand, seems to me that two issues in this case. One is, what is the standard for determining vicarious liability? And that's what you started with, referring to paragraph 19, 18 and 19 of the Court of Appeals decision. And two, once we set that rule of law, are the facts here, the material facts here, undisputed so that summary judgment should be affirmed? And you will take the position that there should not be affirmance of summary judgment, right?
That's okay. Correct, Your Honor.
Now, the Court of Appeals said the majority of cases decided since Rash apply the narrower approach. You agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So the majority rule, as I understand it, is that a franchisor will be liable vicariously for the negligence of the franchisee if the franchisor controls the daily operations of franchisee and exercises a considerable degree of control over the instrumentality at issue. Is that the majority rule?
I don't think that that would be fair to say that that's the majority rule. I think there are various rules in degree of what I would say severity insofar as exempting the franchisor is concerned. What the Court of Appeals did was they essentially went with the Wu case, which is a very strictly in favor of the franchisor.
Well,
but there are some cases that talk more about the right of control over certain aspects of the business and so on and so forth.
Well, they also rely on Hart and Andrula that says, more specifically than franchisor controlling daily operations, that the franchisor controls the manner of performing the very work in the course of which the accident occurred. Now, as I understand this case, you all agree that Arby's controls the size of the hamburger patty, the roll, the mustard, details about the food, so that it's wherever you go, Arby's tastes the same, looks the same. But that isn't where the negligence in this case comes up as to DRI, right?
But the case does not concern the quality of the food,
right.
But it does concern other aspects of the franchise operation which are equally of concern to the public, namely safety.
Right. Here you had an employee checking out, leaves the place of business, leaves Arby, travels about half a mile.
Well, it's across the street. I don't think it's that far.
Big street. Okay.
Right.
Crosses the street, goes to a Walmart parking lot across the street from Arby's, and shoots and kills one person and severely injures the other. And you want to hold Arby's liable?
We want to hold Arby's liable because the negligence that produced that, the fact that this person was engaged in unsafe practices while at the restaurant, including carrying a gun, which he wasn't supposed to have. We aren't saying that Arby's is liable because Arby's was negligent. We are saying that Arby's is responsible for the negligence of the franchisee because it had the right to control these safety practices, the personnel and supervision practices of that restaurant.
Are you arguing negligent hiring?
No.
No. You're arguing negligent supervision.
We're arguing that the restaurant was negligent in these respects, and summary judgment was denied to the restaurant. We are arguing that under the principles of vicarious liability, because Arby's clearly had the right to control this aspect of the business, that Arby's is also liable. Now, I think it is important to focus not on, we're not saying that Arby's was negligent. We're saying that under this agreement, they had the right to control. And I think the critical issue before this court is, do you want to say like the Court of Appeals did there.
Mr. Hildebrand, let me, if I might, interrupt you for a minute. What is there in the record that shows that Arby's had the right to control in terms of the hiring and supervision of employees, such as, I think it's Mr. Pierce in this case?
The record contains, and the agreement is in the appendix. The record says that under the agreement, first of all, ERI is required to comply with the OSM, the standards manual.
Where are you reading from now in the appendix?
It's on appendix page 19. It says licensee has to operate the business strictly in conformance with the operating manual. Then on page 20 of the appendix, DRI has to comply.
But you're looking at the order. We, in our appendix of the circuit court on 19 and 20.
Page 52?
Yeah, it's, I'm sorry.
Is it in the reply brief appendix? I don't think so.
Well, the agreement is in the appendix, and
if you're speaking about the license, is that what you're speaking
yes.
of? I think that's at A31.
Yes, that's in the license agreement, it says that DRI has to operate the business strictly in conformance with the current operating manual. It requires DRI to comply with all federal, state, county, and city laws. It requires DRI to hire, train, maintain, and properly supervise sufficient qualified and courteous personnel for the efficient operation of the business. This is all in the agreement. And then in the operating standards manual, there are requirements about safety and all of that, including not having employees who are armed with guns. But getting back to this point here, I think that if you look at the agreement and the operating standards manual, you'll see that Arby's clearly had the right to control. But if you want to go and adopt the Court of Appeals opinion, then we would have to show that Arby's actually controlled these things. And I don't think that they did. They made various inspections and all of that. But the fact of the matter is that this agreement gave Arby's broad and explicit rights to control these aspects of the business. Now, I would like to get back and say, what is good public policy? You want to encourage franchisors to maintain high standards of operation at their restaurants? Or do you want to let those franchisors excuse them from vicarious liability if they don't go out there and see to it that the operation is managed in accordance with what the agreement provides?
Counselor, my major problem with your argument is, if I buy it and I say, yes, Harvey should be vicariously liable for the negligence, if any, is shown of the franchisee, where's the stopping point? This didn't even occur on Arby's property, certainly not with Arby's knowledge, absolutely not with Arby's consent. Where's the stopping point if we buy your argument?
The stopping point would be dependent on the facts that are proved at the trial. In other words, we never got the chance to go to trial and show the extent to which Arby's controlled or had the right to control.
But this case will apply to other cases, and what I'm looking at is if your facts are sufficient when you go to trial, let's just assume that. My concern is if we say yes to these facts, which are basically physically removed from Arby's, as well as removed from the knowledge that of what was going on, what about the next case that comes up? I mean, where do we put the brakes on? Isn't then everything... And any time there's any relationship between two parties, isn't the one that's got the biggest pocketbook then always liable?
No.
Where would you see this stopping?
Let me ask you this. Would you then, I suppose you would say, well, if Harvey Pierce shot Robin Curl when she was frequenting the restaurant, it would be clear. Because this is on the restaurant. There was a right to control what's going on at the restaurant. And Arby's then is maybe not liable because Harvey Pierce left the restaurant when he wasn't supposed to in violation of these rules and went across the street and shot somebody. My question for you, if there is negligence on the part of the restaurant owner by allowing a person to carry a gun on the premises in violation of the Huber law, what difference does it make that he pulled the trigger across the street rather than at the restaurant? Because the negligence is that the owner of the restaurant was not complying with the law, was not properly supervising the person, was not complying with the Arby's agreement, and was not doing what Arby's had the right to control. So it depends on what is the nature of the negligence, not where the harm occurs. It doesn't matter whether this person was shot at the restaurant. What if he left the? What if she came in to buy a sandwich, and he sees his ex-girlfriend, and she leaves and goes across the street, and he checks out, which he wasn't supposed to do, and goes across the street and shoot her. You can conjure up all sorts of facts, but what I want to emphasize here is that the negligence occurred at the restaurant, and the fact where the damage occurred, where it manifested itself, whether at the restaurant or across the street, is really immaterial for the analysis. You should focus on, in my view, what happened at the restaurant. Was there negligence at the restaurant? And did Arby's have the right to control this? And I think they did.
What negligence are you asserting occurred at the restaurant?
The negligence that occurred at the restaurant was that they had this person employed there who had a history of problems.
Okay, so
who was bringing...
Employed there.
Okay. Had a history of problems, mm-hmm. was inadequately supervised, was not in compliance with the agreement that says we're supposed to have courteous personnel, was not in compliance with the agreement that says all laws are to be complied with, was not in compliance with safety standards and that there aren't supposed to be weapons on the restaurant or on the premises, was not in compliance with the agreement because this man actually bought a gun from a fellow employee. This case is so replete with negligence, and it resulted in a tragedy.
Let me focus on the negligence that you're asserting. Negligence because of the courteous employee provision. For some reason, that just that seems very, very different than the negligence that you are asserting with regard to the sale of a weapon. I mean, both in, I think, in degree, it's very substantially different. What I'm responding to is that you want us to focus on when the negligence occurred as opposed to when the injury occurred.
Well, I would answer the question this way, and I would focus on Appendix page 39, which contains the language, and I apologize for the typo of the brief. During the term of the license, licensee shall hire, train, maintain, and properly supervise sufficient qualified and courteous personnel for the efficient operation of the business. On the previous page, it says licensee shall, it's on page 30, operate the licensed business strictly in conformance with the manual provided by Arby's. And then there's another clause in here that says that there should be compliance with all federal, state, and local
laws. That's the following page.
Yeah. Now, to answer your question, if this agreement is violated, and if there's negligence that arose within the scope of this agreement, then Arby's had the right to control and is therefore liable under the right to control standard.
What if he had terminated his employment the day before this occurred? Would Arby's be named because the gun was sold on the Arby's premises?
I don't know.
Well, I guess when I'm, by asking that question, I'm trying to focus on really what is the negligence that's being asserted. I mean, what's important to the component that he was hired and had a history of problems that put him in contact with someone who would sell him a gun? Is that what you're talking about?
Well,
is the negligence of DRI?
The negligence of DRI is going to be tried someday. And there were facts pro and con as to what the negligence of DRI was. And summary judgment was denied. And there will be a trial on it. Whatever that negligence is, what we are saying is that if it was within the scope of these provisions of the agreement that I just referred to, then if DRI was negligent, maybe they won't be negligent. Maybe a jury will find they weren't negligent. Then our contention is because it comes within the scope of this agreement and the operating standards manual, then Arby's itself is liable also. And we submit that that is good public policy, because of what the public has a right to expect from franchise restaurants, and because the franchisor maintains control or has the right to control, and they get big fees to do it.
Okay.
So
let's get back to the standard, because we have to assume for the purposes of this legal question before us, two legal questions before us. We have to assume that DRI is negligent for our purposes. What is the legal standard you want this court to impose? Is it that if the franchisor has the right to control, then it's liable for negligence? And here I think you can argue they had the right to control everything, quality of the food, and the personnel.
The operations.
The operations, okay. They have the right to control. Whether they actually controlled or not, that isn't the standard you want, is it?
No.
You want a right to control under the license, under the agreement. And you're arguing, as I understand it, these general statements in the license agreement that says, get good employees and follow the law, right? Keep weapons away off the premises. That constitutes the right to control. And then, of course, there are provisions in here that says if you violate the license agreement, they can terminate you if you don't shape up, right? Shape
that's
up or ship out, right?
That's right.
That's what this license agreement says. That's what you want. And that your position, if I understand it, is that the Court of Appeals doesn't do right to control, but does actual control, and limits the actual control to the area of the daily operations, to the negligence that's causal or phrased differently, instrumentality at issue.
Right.
All right. Now, if we adopt your position, doesn't that make all, at least this franchisor, liable for almost anything that occurs? Let's just start on the premises. For almost anything that occurs on the premises.
Not necessarily. I think that our position is best summarized in the Rash decision, and it's my contention that Judge Reynolds, who was a distinguished judge, got it right.
Well, I'm sure that the other judges were distinguished, too, as was Judge Reynolds. So distinguished judges does not persuade me. What persuades me is the finding, or I shouldn't say finding, the rule of law. So what is the Rash rule of law? What you just stated? Either
yes,
right
whether
to control.
It was right to control. And what the Rash court did and what the Drexel court did was they looked at the agreement and they said how much control is there, and then these courts make the analysis accordingly. And I think that's what should be done, because otherwise franchisors that put all this stuff in the agreement can walk away from it. This is not like there's that Oregon case that I cited, which distinguished between a simple thing that said you'll use good workmanlike work and whatever you do, that's not enough. But where you have a manual and where you have a detailed agreement.
Well, there's a dispute about whether the manual covers only owned and operated by Arby's or a franchisee like this, right?
No. There's an employment manual there's the dispute
about,
but then there's the operating standards manual. There's no dispute about that. And if you look at the appendix to our reply brief, you'll see some of the provisions, and those are not tips or suggestions. And
that's the counter-argument as to whether it's tips. Now, who would decide, if it went back, who would decide whether there's actual or a right to control? Is that a legal question to be decided by the judge, or does it go to the jury?
Well, it can be either or both. What Judge Reynolds did and what the Drexel Court did is they looked at the manual, they looked at the agreement, and they said, well, there's disputes as to how much control or right to control there was. And if you have an agreement that is somewhat ambiguous or whatnot, then it becomes a question of fact. If the agreement clearly gives the franchisor the right to control, then I would say there would be summary judgment on vicarious liability for the plaintiff. On the other hand, if all the agreement says is use good workmanlike conditions and you're on your own, it would seem to me that we have the converse case where there could be summary judgment for the franchisor. But here we have a lot, we have considerable detail and considerable obligation and considerable right of the franchisor.
Thank you, Mr. Hildebrand. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Attorney Banks, representing Arby's, Inc. and others.
Thank you, judges.
Morning.
Good morning. I'm Emil Banks, representing Arby's, Inc. and Dennis Rasmussen, Inc. And, Your Honor, one thing that Pellant is right about is this is a question of the public policy here in the state of Wisconsin. Do we want to have a public policy whereby any owner of a franchise, or I should say any franchisor, whether it's McDonald's, whether it's Burger King, that any act that occurs on their premises or any act that occurs by one of their employees when they leave the premises, for example, leave the premises for a break, and they rob somebody or they kill somebody, maim somebody or rape somebody, whether Wisconsin wants to be a state that finds that the franchisor is responsible for that particular act. And I don't think we want to be known as a state that has a blanket policy that no matter what happens at a restaurant, no matter what happens at a franchisee's restaurant, that the franchisor is responsible for that act. In particular, when we're talking about a criminal act that we're talking about here, we have a person who commits an act, and by the way, this is a murder-suicide. We have an individual who has targeted his ex-girlfriend. We're talking about a domestic act, targeted his girlfriend and her new fiancé to kill them. It was plotted, it was planned out, and nobody at the restaurant knew this was going to happen. In fact, the testimony states that even Curl's mother never thought Pierce would stoop to a level where he would go to her place of employment and shoot her. And so the question comes to us, do we want to be a state that says under those circumstances, where nobody knows what Pierce is going to do, nobody knows that he has the gun except for one person, and by the way, nobody in power at Dennis Rasmussen Inc. knew that he had the gun. Nobody at Arby's, states away, knew that he had purchased a gun. So the question is, do we want to be known as a state that finds that anyone who works at a restaurant like Arby's and goes out and commits a crime like Pierce did, is responsible? That is, the franchise or restaurant is responsible for that kind of act.
Mr. Banks, isn't there a way for the franchisor to avoid that kind of problem by making it clear in the license agreement that the franchisor does not control the hiring and supervision of employees?
Well, actually, they did that in this case, in that they didn't put anything in the license agreement that said that they were responsible for anything that the employees did. They were not responsible for any hiring practices, any employment practices whatsoever. They didn't say who to hire, when to hire them, what their hours should be at the restaurant.
Except Article 6 does say that during the term of this license, licensees shall hire, train, maintain, and properly supervise sufficient, qualified, and courteous personnel. So, in a way, Arby's is controlling that because they're telling the franchisee exactly what it is to do.
Well, it's telling the licensee. That provision says the licensee shall do this for the purposes of uniformity of product. What the franchisors are concerned about, and that's around the United States, what they care about is if you're in Wisconsin and you go to an Arby's restaurant, that you can be assured that when you go to Disneyland in Florida, that the sandwich that you always love to order is the same sandwich. My kid goes to McDonald's and he orders number 11 every single time, whether we're in Wisconsin or if we're in California. And so he knows when he gets number 11, which is the double cheeseburger, fries, and a Coke, that he knows when he's in California getting that is the same thing he got in Wisconsin.
But
that's the only purpose.
That doesn't depend on just the product. It depends on the training of the employees as well, does it not?
No, it's only the training as to preparation of the actual sandwich. Their portions. We're dealing with Arby's is a little different from McDonald's. McDonald's, they come pre-prepared, the hamburgers. You just take them, slap them on the grease, and fry them up. Arby's is a little different. They have portions that you put the beef on. So Arby's, of course, is more healthy, but you put the beef on.
A little commercial.
A little, yeah.
You ought to tell that to your kid.
Yeah. Does your son go to Arby's also?
My kid doesn't go to Arby's.
Okay.
My kid doesn't. But nonetheless, they're concerned with portions.
Sure.
And so they make sure, and that's what we talk about the basic report. They talk about, they come in and do inspections. Arby's does, they come in and do inspections. It's called the basic report.
How can you say they're only concerned with portions when the terms of this provision read by Justice Crooks includes hiring courteous personnel?
No, that was just an example of portions. But you're right, they do want courteous personnel, which again, we're still talking about brand management. We're talking about managing a brand. They want courteous personnel. I mean, if somebody comes in and you're rude, of course, they're not going to want to go to Arby's anywhere. That's how I am. I go to a McDonald's and somebody treats me bad, I will write a letter to that McDonald's, but I'm going to be a little shy about going to some other McDonald's, perhaps. But they're concerned about brand management. So, yes, they will be concerned about portions. They will be concerned about cleanliness of the restaurant. They will be concerned about courteous personnel. But they don't take on the hiring practices. They don't monitor who they hire. They don't tell them who they should hire. They don't describe the type of person they need to hire except courteous personnel.
Well, what about in the reply brief, Appendix RA1, which says confidential attorney's eyes only? Arby's commitment to select and orientate our employees. A rule of thumb, always interview all applicants courteously. Then it says how to conduct the selection process, how to properly orientate. Isn't that, what are these, are just helpful hints?
Those are not telling you who to hire. It's telling you how you conduct an interview. It's not telling you that you hire 3 blacks and 5 Hispanics and 7 whites. It doesn't say anything about who you hire. They don't give you a criteria except to say you hire courteous personnel. It's a rule of thumb. It's not this is what you are to do. It's a rule of thumb. Rule of thumbs are suggestions, usually. You want to make sure that you hire those, you ask these kind of questions. You want to make sure that you stay away from these type of questions because they indicate that in there also. Because they want to make sure that they are in compliance with all of the laws with respect to hiring, but they don't tell them who to hire. They don't control who's hired, and they don't control, after the person is hired, what they do, how they did things. They don't come in, when they do the basic report, they're looking at, you know, basically, again, the branding. Is our brand being represented well?
Well, when Mr. Hildebrand was speaking with the court, he said, well, these aren't just general comments like do a good workmanlike job. He indicated if that's what the licensing agreement said, then that's not enough to make the franchisor liable. And if I listen to you, you're saying that's exactly what all this is. Just hire the good people that are going to do a good job, they're going to reflect well on Arby's.
What this is, Your Honor, this is common sense type things that every employer in the United States should go abide by. It's not saying that you, Dennis Rasmussen, Inc., this is what you do only. These are general hints and suggestions on hiring practices. When you hire someone, make sure they're courteous.
Okay. Arby's must have experience with people who don't hire good employees that may be dirty, they don't wash their hands, or whatever else generally good rules in a restaurant are. What would Arby do? In the event of a whole series of complaints about a particular Arby's where they're discourteous, the employees are dirty, they don't wash their hands, a whole series of bad employee reports.
I would imagine if they get a report of people not washing their hands, that is somebody who just plain nasty, that what they would do is send a letter to the restaurant letting them know that they got this complaint. Because the duty to take care of that problem is with Dennis Rasmussen, if we're talking about this restaurant in particular. It's his duty to go and talk to that employee. It's his duty to talk to the manager and say, listen, this is what we've gotten.
His duty under the contract?
No. His duty on to his owning his own restaurant. The way he deals with that employee is his issue and his problem.
Does the agreement give Arby's the right to come in and take over hiring and firing and training and supervision?
It's not in the contract. It's not in the OSM. It's not in the license agreement at all. It doesn't say anywhere in the agreement that Arby's has a right to come in when there's a complaint about any employee and take over that restaurant. This is a franchisee restaurant where Dennis Rasmussen owns it. Period. What they did retain the right to do was if these basic reports came back faulty, they gave them a right to cure. You get 30 days to fix these problems. And basically, BASIC stands for Better Audit Scores, Increased Clients.
What if they don't take care of the problems? Can they lose the franchise? Can Dennis Rasmussen lose his franchise?
If they do the basic audit, where they're talking about the cleanliness of the restaurant, they're talking about the food portions, they're talking about the courtesy, I believe, yes, they could lose a restaurant. They could pull the license. What? Now, Arby's does not come in and take over the restaurant. Dennis Rasmussen loses the license. So he can go on with the physical plant where the restaurant's located.
But it wouldn't be an Arby's.
It would not be an Arby's. It would not hold Arby's name. It would simply be Dennis Rasmussen, Inc., and maybe you just call it Buys. Take out the A and the R and use it that way. We don't know what would happen, but again, Arby's does not come in and take over the restaurant because it's not their restaurant. It's Dennis Rasmussen's restaurant. Dennis Rasmussen is responsible for hiring. They're responsible for firing. There's not one scintilla of evidence that anyone ever complained from Arby's, that is Dennis Rasmussen, to the Arby's corporate office about any employee actions. There's not one scintilla of evidence that anyone from Dennis Rasmussen's restaurant ever contacted the Arby's for advice on anything to do with employment, nothing to do with hiring, nothing to do with firing. Not one scintilla of evidence that anyone from Arby's home office ever contacted the Dennis Rasmussen restaurant and said, you guys are not running that restaurant properly. properly because you're not hiring the proper people. Yes, they did hire a Huber work release employee, but nobody from Arby's ever contacted Dennis Rasmussen's place of business and complained about that because they had no right to control that particular issue in this restaurant.
Counsel, you seem to be melding in your example the right to control and the actual control. You say no one from Arby's ever called to control. I mean, that kind of call would indicate not only a right to control, but actual control, which leads me to Mr. Hildebrand's comment regarding the Court of Appeals opinion and what he considers to be an infirmity with the Court of Appeals opinion. He indicates the Court of Appeals does not do right to control, but actual control. Do you agree with that? I think he's probably making reference to paragraph 19 of the Court of Appeals opinion, which the dissent also, or concurring opinion also references. And paragraph 19 says, rather the decisive factor is whether the franchisor controls the daily operations of the franchisee such that it exercises a considerable degree of control over the instrumentality at issue. I want to focus on this. What is the Court of Appeals saying? Is it saying that the standard is the control or right to control, or is it just saying the standard is, as it indicates on paragraph 19, the control of the daily operations that it exercises?
I believe it's talking about the control. That is, that the actual control of the instrumentality that caused the particular harm that's being complained of.
Then how does that comport with, for instance, their holding or their conclusion, which indicates in paragraph 30, we conclude that the standard for imposing vicarious liability on a franchisor for the negligent acts of a franchisee requires that the franchisor have a right of control or actual control. It seems like they're saying both actual control and right of control. And I want to know, what's the Court of Appeals saying?
Well,
controlled over personnel matters.
Yeah, control over the instrumentality. They're saying it has to be control over the alleged negligent activity.
I believe what they were doing is, in this particular case, the finding was that Arby's had no right to control, but did not actually control.
I want to know what the standard is.
With a standard based upon what you just read is that as long as there is, quote, no right to control, or, they don't use the word and, or actual control, then of that particular instrumentality, that is, whatever's causing the particular or the complaint of negligence, then the Court of Appeals is saying there is no responsibility on behalf of the franchisor. Again, I believe what they're going to is, how are we going to find a franchisor who gives a license to a franchisee, gives a person in Wisconsin the ability to own their own business. We allow them to control the business. We allow them to hire whom they want to hire.
I want to focus, because I'm still not clear, on the difference between the requirement of actual control, that standard, as opposed to the standard that allows for actual or the right to control, whether or not that right is exercised.
Well, the difference is this, and that's exactly what you just said. Someone, like a McDonald's, for example, may retain the right to control who is hired and the hiring practices of a particular restaurant, but they elect not to enforce that and never enforce it. So 10 years go by, and we have a situation where the McDonald's is being... It's controlling itself. It's self-sufficient. It's autonomous.
I understand the difference between right to control, which may not be exercised, and actual control. My question is, what is the Court of Appeals setting as a standard? Paragraph 19 seems to me to be inconsistent with paragraph 30.
Well, see, I don't think it is inconsistent. I believe they're doing just what I just said. They're giving a McDonald's or Burger King the right to put in their contract that they have a right to control a particular instrumentality, but they may choose not to exercise that right. And if they do not choose to exercise that right, and the place becomes autonomous, and they're running their own business, they're doing their own thing, and McDonald's or Burger King doesn't know what's going on with them, they don't contact them, how can you hold McDonald's or Burger King liable when they don't know what's going on, and they have no reason to know what's going on with that particular restaurant?
If that's the case, why, as the concurring opinion says, why do you need vicarious liability? If you have either actual control, or I have a right to control, but turn my head and just am too busy and don't do anything about it, seems to me you don't need the doctrine of vicarious liability, that there's arguably some, there's negligence by omission, if not commission. Why do you need to employ it?
You're talking to a defense lawyer. I would argue you don't need vicarious liability. I would argue that the entity that is responsible for the particular negligence should be the one who is liable.
Well, counsel, what standard do you think should be used? Now, the general rule of law is... that the head of Arby's does not do everything, and the Arby's Corporation doesn't do it, but it delegates authority. It delegates authority to someone to drive an Arby's truck, right? Delegates authority to someone to get the meat out there. May even grow its own cattle and get its own meat. And Arby's is liable for all of its employees acting within the scope of employment, right? So if some truck driver drives the truck negligently, Arby's is liable vicariously, right?
If it's an Arby's corporate truck.
Okay,
yes.
Right. I'm going to get you back to the franchisee. Right. That's the basic law,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
All right. The argument here is that the Arby's franchisee is either a servant or a agent of the franchisor. That's, in effect, the argument, so that the franchisor is liable for acts of the franchisee within that scope of employment. Your argument, I think, is that the franchisee is an independent contractor.
My argument is, in this case in particular, the contract, license agreement says that Dennis Rasmussen, Inc. is an independent contractor. Now, the law says we don't just look at that.
Right.
We've got to look at other factors.
Right.
And in this case, if you look at other factors, when you talk about the instrumentality that caused the damages, that is absolutely true. He's an independent contractor. They do nothing with respect to hiring and firing practices.
What about, suppose I got poisoned?
Different story.
The food. Exactly. That's why I'm giving you the
Absolutely.
Story.
That's a different story.
Going to be liable? Arby's going to be liable?
Potentially, they could be liable. Under, if they are dealing with poisoned food. Because Arby's comes in and they look at whether the food is being prepared properly. So then the question becomes is, because if it goes to a jury trial, the question will be, if you have Dennis Rasmussen, Inc. there and Arby's there, the question is, who caused the harm? And if it's Dennis Rasmussen, Inc., he caused the harm, because the allegation against Arby's in that instance would be that you come in, you look at this food, and you didn't find any procedure that they were doing wrong, then maybe you were wrong and maybe you were negligent in your procedures. So, yes, if you're talking about, and that's right in line with the Court of Appeals decision, if you're talking about something that they're controlling or something that they're supervising, then perhaps Arby's may be negligent. But again, you're going to look at Arby's, were you negligent in your performance of your duties in inspecting this place?
Mr.
Mr. Banks, isn't there a statute that prohibits an employer from discriminating against at least some ex-offenders?
Absolutely.
I imagine there are many ex-offenders, and we'd like to get them employed.
That's exactly right. And, yes, the statute says that you can't discriminate against an ex-offender unless the offense deals with the employment. For example, if you're a bank robber, a bank doesn't have to hire you. Because a bank robber, they say once a bank robber, all a bank robber, always a bank robber. So you may get into the bank and rob the bank. So yes, Arby's can't discriminate against Pierce. Pierce was convicted of second-degree sexual assault. A judge found that Pierce was eligible for the Huber program. And therefore, Arby's or Dennis Rasmussen hired Pierce. Actually, they could not hire Pierce unless there was some other reason why Pierce was ineligible for being hired. Now, that's a good point that you bring, because if we find under public policy that Arby's is liable for not properly supervising Pierce, a Huber inmate, it could have a chilling effect on other franchisees hiring Huber inmates. Huber inmates have a limited number of jobs that they qualify for. Usually, those who are incriminated because they don't have the proper education. Now, that's just one factor. But because you don't have the proper education, you qualify for very few jobs. And quite honestly, the entry-level jobs for most high school students usually is a franchisee restaurant. And the same thing happens with respect to Huber employees. They work usually at franchisee restaurants. And if this court finds that a franchisor like Arby's, McDonald's, and you can go down and name a lot of them, is responsible for the actions of a Huber employee who goes off premises a half a mile away and targets his ex-girlfriend, commits domestic violence on his girlfriend and her fiancé, it will have a chilling effect in this community on hiring Huber employees who we want to hire because it helps them in the rehabilitation process.
I think one thing that's unclear to me is when Arby's has control and when it doesn't have control. For instance, suppose an Arby's in Racine decides they want to bring in Kringle, made in Racine, put it in Arby's. Doesn't Arby's have the authority to say, that's really not in our program, and you can't do that?
Absolutely. Because again, they are protecting their brand. If they say that's not a brand we want in our restaurant, or we don't want that to be associated with McDonald's, they have a right to say, no, you can't bring in the Kringles. And, I mean, that's one problem some of the Arby's have. They have these cinnamon buns. And some of the Arby's restaurants want to make their own cinnamon buns. But Arby's says, no, you use our cinnamon buns. Because that's what we have developed, that's what we're familiar with, and that's what we can control. So, yes.
So you have Kringle, and you have sexual offenders. When do they have the right to step in and say, no, you can't do that?
Well, first of all, they have to be law-abiding. And with respect to the sexual offender, they would be breaching the law if they said, no, you can't bring in sexual offenders. That's number one. But to answer your question, I believe they have a right, of course, to say, we will control your employees. They have a right to say that if they choose to do that. But when they give these franchisees a license, they choose to worry about their brand, and they choose not to deal with the issues of employment. That is what the franchisee is responsible for. We'll deal with the brand, you deal with the employees. That's what they've chosen to do.
Where does it say that in the contract?
What it says in the contract is, it's silent as to dealing with employment issues. By the silence, they're indicating that they're not dealing with employee issues. You're dealing with them. Their license talks forever about their brand. This is how you represent Arby's. This is what Arby's is. This is what Arby's stands for. It stands for courteous, good sandwiches with good portions. We don't deal with employee issues. We're in Florida. We can't deal with your employee issues in Wisconsin. We can deal with your issues regarding the branding.
Counsel, the Court of Appeals opinion, as I read it, rests in large part on the Hofnagel case, or in cases like that. And that Iowa case indicates, against McDonald's Corporation, McDonald's did not retain sufficient control to owe a duty of security to the franchise employees. Now, in Wisconsin, we generally don't limit liability based on duty. We don't say, oh, you don't have a duty. Rather, we limit liability based on public policy reasons, too remote, unreasonable burden, the five general public policy reasons. The law also provides that generally those public policy reasons are not employed to limit liability until and unless there's a finding of negligence. So aren't you here too early? Shouldn't this case go to trial to determine whether or not ERI is negligent before summary judgment can be addressed as to whether or not liability should be limited?
Well, the Court of Appeals did decide the case based upon public policy. Court of Appeals decided the case based upon there was no evidence whatsoever to say that Arby's had anything to do with the employment issues.
Well, as I understood, at least, and I can be wrong on this, but as they discussed these other cases are because there's not sufficient control of the instrumentality or sufficient control of the general operation to say that there is a duty. Maybe it's just disagreement. I just don't know how we employ this duty concept into our jurisprudence.
My time's up. Maybe you respond or not.
Yes, you may, Mr. Banks.
Okay. Again, the Court of Appeals decides the case, and this is what the judge doing in the case, the trial court, decide the case based upon there being no evidence whatsoever that Arby's had anything to do with the hiring practices or the supervising of employees at the Dennis Rasmussen, Inc. restaurant.
To follow up on that, Hofnagel was not a vicarious liability case, was it? It was a case involving an independent basis for negligence finding against the franchisor. So to the extent that the Court of Appeals relied on Hofnagel or cases in that category, it is not applicable here because this case is about, at least as against Arby's, is about vicarious liability.
Correct.
And not any independent basis for an action for negligence against Arby's as a franchisor.
I believe that's correct. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Banks. Mr. Hildebrand?
I don't think it's quite appropriate to view this case as involving negligent hiring or negligent supervision. And it's also not appropriate to view this case as involving the hiring of a person who had had some criminal problems. And the Chief Justice asked about what if you have an employee that doesn't wash his hands, and then food gets contaminated and all of that. Would Arby's be responsible for that? They might come in here and say, oh, no, I mean, we don't supervise employees. There was nothing wrong with our beef that we sent there. There was nothing wrong with the product that we sent there and all of that. But yet you've got an employee who doesn't wash his hands, and you've got an operator there that doesn't supervise an employee that doesn't wash his hands, and it affects the product. This case really focuses on what Arby's had the right to do. And you can read that agreement. My opponent, to his credit, characterizes it as this is just negligent hiring and supervision, and Arby's doesn't tell you who to hire and how to supervise. But what they do tell you is that the product has to be right, that the safety has to be right, that the premises have to be right, and this case arises out of that. There was absolutely no deterring effect to hold Arby's liable here about hiring people who've had criminal problems, Your Honor, because the same thing would have happened had Pierce not been on Huber Law and had a gun on the premises. That's what we're talking about. The reason the Huber Law is important is because Arby's says in its agreement that its restaurants, its franchisees, are supposed to comply with the law. And the law, of course, has many manifestations. And if you hire a Huber Law person, then the law says that that person shouldn't be carrying a gun. But Arby's own manual says people shouldn't have guns on the premises. So this really has nothing to do with chilling the hiring of people who are trying to rehabilitate themselves. That's a complete misnomer. I think it's a great idea that people with criminal problems can be hired. But I think that if they are hired, then if they're on Huber, the Huber laws have to be followed. And if anybody is hired, they can't bring a gun on the premises.
But the chief asked you, I believe it was the chief, what was the negligence involved here? And the very first thing that you said, Mr. Hildebrand, was that there was negligence in hiring.
Well, she asked me if I was basing this case on negligent hiring, and I said no. I recall saying that. What the problem though is that if you look at RA 7 and 8, where they have the safety responsibilities and the safety practices, these are in the OSM, which under the agreement the franchisee was supposed to follow, and Arby's did have the right to enforce the agreement. And Justice Sykes asked if they could come in and take over the restaurant. The answer is no. What they could do, though, is they could, after notice, they could terminate him. Now, is that the provision that would give sufficient control? Some case law says yes. And what we're talking
if that were the law, then if that's proper agency law, then every franchisor is vicariously liable for anything that happens at the franchise, and that's not the law.
Well, but that's not a truth,
Your
Honor.
Retains the right to terminate the agreement if it's violated.
If I may, Your Honor, the law depends, a vicarious liability depends on, in our view, the control and the right of control over those aspects of the business as stated in the agreement.
Right.
This law does, we're not saying that Arby's has to be negligent in some way. It's only that they have the right to control. And there are tremendous benefits that Arby's and all of its franchises have by having this control element. And the public policy is, I think, very clear that the public and people who work there are entitled to rely on that. And the brand, what my opponent talks about, the brand, it's important not only that the sandwiches taste right, but that you have a clean restaurant, that you have a safe restaurant, that you have employees washing their hands, and that the employees be supervised to that end. And if the agreement says that Arby's has the right to insist on that, and if you don't, it's terminated, it's our contention that that gives them the right of control. They get paid for it. They get paid big franchise fees and royalties,
But that's not the rule in the case law. The cases don't hold that if you, in your franchise agreement, establish certain quality standards and establish that if those quality standards are violated, that the agreement can be terminated, that makes the franchisor vicariously liable for everything that goes on in the franchise. That's not the case law.
It's only within the scope of that agreement. And this agreement goes a lot further than just prescribing what shall be served at the restaurant. It covers the operation.
What cases are there anywhere that hold that if a franchise agreement establishes certain quality standards for the operation of the franchise, that makes the franchisor vicariously liable for everything that happens in that franchise.
That's not what the cases hold. The cases focus on the overall agreement and what is required. And if you look at the Rash and the Drexel case from the Third Circuit, you will see that it's this overall control of the operation that establishes what the vicarious liability is. If they have the control or right to control, then they're liable. That's what the cases say, Rash and Drexel.
Thank you, Mr. Hildebrand, and thank you, Mr. Banks, for your argument about the vicarious liability of a franchisor. And this is a case of first impression for this court, although courts across the country have ruled on similar cases, and federal courts have attempted to predict what this court would do. Well, thank you for your argument. That concludes our session on 02-1273, Robert Curl versus Dennis Rasmussen.